The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Nearly True here at 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you for the rest of the hour, and then I'll be replaced by Charlie Kirk. We'll go live and local at 3 o'clock with Stephen Tubbs. Interesting. The last 3 hours have been really interesting to me. And of course, on the Peter Boyle's wall of love/hate that's up here, there has been a real mix. There have been a lot of folks that have chimed in with real concerns about the direction that the GOP is taking with the presence of Hanks and Peters on the ticket. Others, and I would not say it's the majority at all, in fact, it's a great minority, have come in, of course, with the typical establishment Republicans. Here's one. Establishment is, I responded to this guy, establishment is such a BS term. It sounds like you think Hanks and Peters can win statewide. This, and I presume it's a dude, only establishment Republicans think establishment is a BS word. Wake up and smell the coffee. The establishment country club. That is me, by the way. I have been a country club guy ever since both of my working parents helped get me that ROTC scholarship that was my only way of paying for college. That feels very country clubbish. Maybe they can win statewide, more willing to take the chance with them than the same. Yeah. After all, the establishment-backed Republican candidates have gotten their asses kicked in this state for the last two decades. And all of the other candidates that can't seem to escape the primary, I don't know what you blame that on.
George, but just to make sure, I got to clear something up. The country club affiliation or quote slur is the replacement for the rhino or squish moniker.
That's still
out
there.
It is now evolved. Yeah, but it's now evolved. It's no longer, they no longer call you a Republican. Yeah. They no longer call you a squish. It's now you're a country club Republican, regardless of the fact that most of the people that are using that moniker belong to country clubs themselves.
Well, and I'm interested in knowing if your establishment, if you have been the Republican nominee for a congressional office in another state again, like Lauren has, or if you're an establishment Republican, if you've been elected already and you're the incumbent clerk and recorder somewhere, does that make you establishment? Or is it something else? Is it just, I disagree with your positions, and so therefore you're a rhino and you're establishment? We're going to explore more of this in the coming days, and I'd love to get your input. And if you have the courage to move from texting to conversation on the phone at 303-696-1971, we'll take you, but not right away here, because we're joined by a special VIP guest who has decided to try to make a change in Denver by running for mayor. I think this is the first time we've spoken on air before. Mr. Terrence Roberts, sir, thanks for joining us here on 710 KNUS.
Thank you for having me on the air.
I don't think you and I have ever chatted before. Is that true?
I don't think we have, but we have a precarious path with one another.
That's true. Let's do this for the folks that don't know you from other conversations you've had with Pete and other folks on the radio. Give us a little bit about your background, and then we'll lead up to the decision to run for mayor of Denver.
I'm born and raised in Northeast Denver. I'm from the Park Hill community. Loved going to school. I used to play sports. I played football, basketball, soccer, and baseball, actually. I used to be on the honor roll around the time when gangs really started proliferating in Denver, the late 80s, early 90s. Being a kid from Northeast Denver, really those were the activities that we had. Those were the men and women we looked up to, were gangster rappers, drug dealers. We had the crack epidemic. It became very violent in the area. I did join the Park Hill Bloods gang. I've been gunned down. I was incarcerated when I was a youth.
No, hang on, Terrence. When you said you've been gunned down, have you been shot before?
Yes, I've actually been shot twice. I was shot in the summer of violence of 1993. I was one of those victims. I was shot in my back. I had to be rehabilitated to walk properly again at Craig Medical Center. And then I was shot again in my arm after that. I was in the street gang. I was really involved in being a youth who was almost homeless. I never slept in a tent, but my home situation was not stable. There are levels to homelessness, and I experienced that as a youth, and that's kind of what we're dealing with our violence problem in Denver today. It's mainly youth violence related. But after that, I ended up getting incarcerated. I was going back and forth to jail, and, you know, I started studying about activists like Che Guevara, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, all kinds of different, Jimmy Carter, you know, people like that. And people like that really just struck a chord with me, and I really wanted to become a revolutionary. And I started studying the life of these different people, men and women who were helping people in the same way gangster rap and, you know, the poverty that hit North East Denver made me want to join the Bloods gang, thinking it was more of a pro-social group to help my community as a youth. I really wanted to become a revolutionary, and I really wanted to become an activist. And when I got out of prison in 2004, I started the Prodigal Son Initiative. And I started an after-school program in Park Hill. We had 11 kids. We would play chess. We would play checkers. Huh. We would talk about politics, go to the MLK parade, go hiking, rafting. So it went from 11 kids, and then it ended up being 55 kids. And then I moved it to the Park Hill United Methodist Church, and it grew. We ended up having thousands of kids in North East Denver come through the program. And in 2013, I did have to defend my life. I was actually almost physically attacked, if I didn't defend myself, by a group of Bloods from the gang that I actually used to be from. I created a literal Frankenstein, I have to say. When they attacked me, I defended myself. It's on camera. I was acquitted of this. And after that, I started really focusing on more police accountability work and really doing what I can. Sometimes it's a protest. Sometimes we may help drive bills like Senate Bill 217. Sometimes, you know, it's just a conversation. But whatever we have to do to move the needle is what we do with my organization. And besides that, I'm really just here to run for mayor because I don't trust any of the establishment politicians who are throwing their hat in the ring. And I think that a lot more could be done in Denver around our homelessness situation, around our youth violence situation. We still have that great Paul debacle at the airport. There's a lot of things we can talk about. I can go on and on about what we're experiencing in our city right now.
Let's get to, and we're talking with Terrence Roberts, civil rights activist, former gang member, candidate for Denver mayor. There's some just things I'd like to back up and ask you about, and not to turn this all bio, but there's just things I don't know about you that you brought up where I'm like, oh, that's interesting to me. One is, okay, you said you were a member of the Park Hill, did you say Bloods?
Yes, sir.
Park Hill Bloods. And you talked about the influence that rap music had and that it was social. Do you mind me asking, what was your home life like at the time that you made that decision? And do you think it had an impact on your decision to join a gang?
You know, my mom was young and my father was young. My father was staying in Oakland, California at the time. And he was a young man going through the things he was going through in his 20s and early 30s. And so was my mom. You know, my mom, she's from Denver. Both of them are from Denver, but my father moved to California for a while. And I would go out there to see him. But my mom was having her issues too. Now my mom's a successful realtor. But it was just a crazy time, you know, in the African-American community during the late 80s and early 90s. It was a war zone. It was literally a war zone for residents who were caught up in that. So my home life wasn't the best, but I'm not going to just claim absolute poverty either, because my mother did take care of me. My grandmother actually owned a soul food restaurant in the middle of Park Hill, which has now been redeveloped. And my grandmother also took good care of me. So if I really wanted to invest in going to college and put my mind into that, I have the work ethic and intelligence for it. I was just, you know, infatuated with the gang life at that time. I was a 13-year-old child. Wow. Making manly decisions, and it didn't end very well.
Now, talk about, if you would, one, what did you get sentenced to prison for? Was it adult prison or kiddie prison? How long did you serve, and did it have any meaningful impact on your life?
So I've been to prison for simple robbery, previous offender with a handgun. I actually got caught with a shank in prison, having to defend myself because at that time I was in the gang, and I was caught with a shank. I got an extra couple of years for that. And prison had the most profound effect on my life. I hated prison. There's nothing cute or fun about the penitentiary. So it really made me focus up and really made me decide, You know, when I first went to prison, I was still young. I was fighting. I was being disruptive, getting right up. But as I started maturing in prison, as I started really studying other activists and revolutionaries, it really made me want to be more of a stoic person, more of a person who just studies. I want to be knowledgeable, and I really want to help my people. And I became an activist in prison. I got baptized, actually, in Kansas City. And when I got baptized, wow, I was able to bring hundreds of rival gang members to my baptism. So many gang members came to my baptism in Kansas City that they actually moved me from the facility because I was getting more of a positive reputation in prison and not a negative one coming from the stature of the street gang I was from. They hadn't seen it before, but I was getting respect. And wow, it's worked. It helped me. My gang past helped me to really get people together in prison who would have never even spoken to one another.
Now, we have heard from a lot of policymakers out there that they want to keep as many people from prison as possible for their offenses. It sounds like, and you correct me if I misstate this or overstate it, but it sounds like prison actually turned out to be, and I don't mean fun or happy in this way, but a good thing for you.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's an individual person, so prison affects people in certain ways. I mean, did I have my trauma from being in prison? Definitely that. There is a lot of violence in prison. There is a lot of yelling, screaming. There's a lot of hopelessness for some people. But when I wanted to really change my life, when I really wanted to wrap my mind around what it takes to really be a real man instead of paroling to my grandmother's house as an adult, you know, trying to find a job at a fast food restaurant, it had a profound effect on me to where it forced me to say now, it's either now or never. So I haven't committed a crime since. I've been accused of committing crimes, but I have not actually committed crime since 1999, 2000 is my last go around with that. It's been over 20 years. So since then, I've been an organizer.
Let's talk about that thing you brought up too, 2013. You were accused of exactly what and with what weapon, if anything, did you defend yourself, and what happened to the other guy?
So in 2013, I was spearheading a redevelopment project of the Holly Square Shopping Center when 9 Crips burned it down in a wow, retaliatory arson because the founder of the Denver Crips was murdered and they thought the Bloods in Park Hill had done this homicide. So they burned down the Holly. They arsoned the entire shopping center. I was really advocating with, at that time, then newly elected mayor, John Hickenlooper. The arson rubble sat there for over a year. Now I'm the face of activism coming out of prison in the Holly Square. So myself and at that time, State Senator Michael Johnson moved into an office, called it the Park Hill Community Center, across the street from the arson rubble. And I really got to work on getting it cleaned up. In the process of getting the Holly cleaned up, we did a couple of protesting, police brutality. Michael Brown had gotten killed in Ferguson and different things were going on just in Denver County with police brutality. And when I started doing some protesting around that, several officers fell out of favor with me. And also some older gang members who I grew up with in Park Hill who are actually still gangbanging told some younger men to attack me. And there's a lot of politics that goes into exactly everything that happened. It took Julian Rubenstein 7 years to kind of unpack it all and put it in the book. But there were some politics and some intricacies. But for the most part, some older guys who were working for police officers who fell out of favor with me told these younger men to attack me, and I shot one of them. He's actually in prison right now.
Wow.
For torturing and murdering his girlfriend's 2-year-old daughter.
Oh, my good Lord.
20-year sentence. He was involved with some other shootings and other crimes after I shot him. He is a paraplegic. I did have a 9mm pistol. I did have to have it because they were threatening my life, leaving notes, calling me a snitch, saying that they were going to harm me, do things to me. It was a big mess.
And so did you end up getting charged by the Denver DA's office and going to trial?
Yes, sir. I was acquitted at trial. It was pretty much a nationally watched trial.
Now, did they also charge you with possession of a weapon by a previous offender, which is, as you know, is a felon with a gun?
Yes, they did. And that charge was actually dismissed when I was acquitted for the attempted murder and for the first degree assault because my charges were bifurcated and my jurors actually wrote a note to the judge saying we're going to find him not guilty of the
weapon
possession because I proved, and it's on camera.
Yeah.
There's a documentary actually coming out called The Holly that shows it.
Yeah.
You didn't know it was on camera unless you actually came and sat in on my trial.
Yeah.
But, so they did dismiss my weapons case because I proved that I used it lawfully to defend myself and other people who were standing there with me. There were over 60 bloods in the area.
Oh, boy.
And about 25 of them tried to assault me.
We're talking with Terrence Roberts, civil rights activist, former gang member, current candidate for mayor. Here's what I'd like to do with your permission, if you have the time. Can we carry you over for a break? And then I really want to talk about what in the hell would make you want to run for office in this day and age with everything going on. Would you stick around for us?
Let's talk about it.
Let's do it. Hey, Terrence Roberts with us on here. We'll be back after a break. George Brockler on the George Brockler Show at 710 KNUS. George Brockler back with you here on 710 KNUS. Pleased to be joined on the VIP line right now by Terrence Roberts, civil rights activist, former gang member. Told us some great background stuff I had only read little bits about, but Terrence, thank you for coming on and talking to us about this. I want to jump into, and by the way, you should know, Terrence, I get these texts on this. We're still coming up with a name for it, like the Pete Boyles Wall of Hate, Love, all this. A lot of good comments about you and how you sound like a decent guy and all this other stuff. I think a lot of people like me would ask in this day and age, especially in Denver, which feels like a political meat grinder of in a way, why would you do this? You're doing such great work for lives, for the community. Why throw your hat in the ring for this race?
I mean, so I know politics has pretty much been described as a blood sport, but I have such a
no
high
pun intended
profile. Excuse me?
No pun intended for the bloods. No
oh,
pun.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. But no, I know it's a hard business. You know, I know you have to be mentally ready to do it, physically ready to do it, and knowledgeable about the issues. I'm already going through the slander in the media. People already treat me like I'm an elected official. I'm not an elected official. I currently work for Zillow, okay? I'm just an organizer. We don't raise any money with FTRA, with my organization. We use our own funds. And, you know, the things that I want to do to help people, the things that I wanted to change as studying these revolutionaries, I'm not going to be able to do that protesting, walking down the highway in Aurora 5 or 6 more times. That is not going to happen. We had a particular push in Aurora in 2020 because of COVID, because of George Floyd getting murdered on camera, because of these different things happening, Elijah McClain, all of these things. But that, I hope we don't have to have another year like 2020. You know, I'm almost 50 years old now. I don't have time to waste my entire life just trying to figure out how I can ambulance chase. I want to, if I am protesting and if I am putting myself out there, I want it to be for tangible results and for a particular purpose. We do have some activists who just want to be famous and get that Facebook picture with the bullhorn. You know, I bought my first bullhorn in 2004 from Radio Shack. It doesn't even work anymore. And people were laughing about it.
And some people are out there going, what the hell is Radio Shack?
Yeah, that's how old I am. That's how long I've been an activist. Okay, so I want to become mayor because who else is going to be the next mayor of Denver? I'm willing to put myself out there, my reputation, my safety. I'm not ashamed of myself. You know, I do have a precarious history for someone getting into politics, but I've done my time, and I've really had tangible results with all of my activism and with what I've done with city leaders. Who's going to become mayor of Denver after Michael Hancock leaves? I'm proposing to even cut my own term limits because whoever gets into office, once they make all their appointments and once they're set in there, it's very hard to unseat an incumbent. I don't hear anybody.
So Terrence, what would you say? I will limit myself to how many terms?
2 terms. That 9 out of the 10 biggest cities in America have 2-term mayors. Denver is not a little cow town anymore.
Yeah.
It's the second fastest growing city in America. We can't have any more 3-term mayors. Even if it's a good mayor, 8 years is plenty. A 3-term mayor governs totally different from a 2-term mayor. who needs to get reelected, and then that's within their term limited.
What would you do differently? Where do you think the shortcomings are in the current mayoral office in terms of what they've approached and how they've done it? What would you do differently?
So right now, our public safety budget is 39% of our general fund, which is $1.5 billion. That was the budget that was approved by city council for 2022. Out of $566 pretty much million dollars, that is almost half of our public safety budget. That's 39%. 2% of that goes to housing. 2%. But what are people in Denver County saying? One of the number one things that they're concerned about is housing. So if people are have been saying for the last 5-6 years that the number one issue that they're concerned about is housing and safety, why would city council even approve a budget that only has 2% going to housing? We've spent more money on busing up small encampments than we could have used to even literally develop public housing. But instead, we're literally throwing millions of dollars away every year, pushing homeless people from the Triangle downtown into Capitol Hill, now into Aurora, now into Douglas County. There's a lot of different things that we can do. The money's there. I am in full support of the marijuana industry. However, in 2020, they broke a record, $2.19 billion in revenue. And in 2022, another record is poised to be broken, $2.22 billion. The money is there. I would like the proper accounting. Maybe this is not my own due diligence with where all of this marijuana money is going, but the city of Denver might be owed millions of dollars. That could be gold. That could be going to public safety dollars, okay? When we have our mayor asking for citizens to approve a $190 million arena, which I feel is just was a legacy project, but we only have 2% going to housing, we need to reshift our priorities. The money is there. We just have to reshift our priorities on how we're spending the money. We only spent $5 million on a state-of-the-art youth center in the Holly when it was arson and burned down. The money is there. You know how many people we could house in that building if we had it retrofitted to get people off of the streets? But probably about 80 people for $5 million. So, you know, well, I could go on and on. We've been studying the public.
No, this is all good. But, Terrence, so is it fair to say that you're one of your primary focuses, not to the exclusion of everything else, but one of your primary focuses is the homeless issue in Denver?
That is my number one concern, because I think the second most important issue to voters in Denver is public safety and violence. Most of our violence in Denver is gang-related. This is not Philadelphia. This is not New Orleans, where you have 50-year-old gangsters who are killing people because they're owed hundreds of thousands of dollars in heroin money. The city is not set up like that. This is a great city, okay? We do have some issues with poverty and homelessness. Our homeless issue is not like Skid Row in Los Angeles, where they have 250,000 people on Skid Row. I've done work in the Tenderloins in San Francisco. Denver is not that.
Sir, can I forgive me to cut you off on the homelessness thing, but I want to get back to something important you said, and that is, look, you think that the majority driver for crime in the Denver metro area is gangs. Based on your expertise, and you are the only, my guess is nobody running for this office is ever going to have the expertise that you have in this. What is causing the surge in gang violence? What is missing from the lawmakers' policy, you know, toolbox or law enforcement? What are we doing wrong that this thing is surging now?
I mean, homelessness.
So you think the gang violence is directly related to the homelessness?
Yeah, so you remember what I said to you earlier? Remember what I said when I was a gang member?
Yeah.
But I never put in a tent. However, when you're a 16-year-old kid and you have two or three ghost guns and you're sleeping in your friend's mom's basement, that's homelessness.
Yeah.
That's a form of homelessness. And not all of our homicides and crimes is youth or gang-related. We have domestic violence murders in encampments. You know, we have different things that happen, random things, but that doesn't happen very often in the city of Denver. A lot of our homicides are youth and gang-violent-related, and that's just not Denver County. That's in Aurora. that's in Thornton, that's in Commerce City, that's in Denver and the surrounding areas. If you counted all of our homicides in Denver County and our metro areas, surrounding areas, like they do in Los Angeles, because it's all L.A. County, we would have over 200 homicides a year in the metro area.
Well, if you, Aurora and Denver are the big drivers of that, and you are right that the gang presence there is big, and it feels like it's been getting bigger over time. Can I ask you about another component of this? And they all may be tied together. I'd love your opinion on this. There was a move by Denver just recently, and Peter and Stefan and Mark Crowley and others kind of took this thing head on to go to these safe injection sites. What are your thoughts on that?
So I haven't really wrapped my mind around safe injection sites, but if I am elected mayor, I am going to be the type of mayor that will listen about safe injection sites. And if it makes sense to where it saves lives and keeps our city safer and it takes a burden off of our first responders and off of our police, I will approve safe injection sites, definitely.
It is something where I'd encourage you to look at some of the documentaries out there. And then I know that Pete and Stefan went up to Vancouver and took around. I just happened to be there. I didn't go up there to look at safe injection sites, but I drove down this street, Hastings Street. And Terrence, this place has turned into, it looks like Escape from New York in certain ways. The number of homeless addicts that litter the streets, it makes you sad for humanity. It hasn't seemed to have helped. It seems to have just pulled all of these homeless drug addicts into one particular place in town.
So I have to say, I can't speak to that, and you obviously seen it yourself. But like I said, if I feel like in Denver County, if it makes sense, I will entertain it. If it does not make sense, if you know, our safe injection site is looking like Kensington Ave in Philadelphia, then, you know, that's something that we won't be doing. Because I'm not here to play politics and just push what progressives or conservatives want me to do. I'm actually unaffiliated, but I registered as a Democrat because this is a Democratic city.
Yeah, true.
I'm here to make Denver the best city in the world. And if that's not something that's going to be feasible, then we won't be doing it. But if it is feasible for Denver, because Denver is not Philly, Denver is not New York, you know, and people are going to use drugs.
Well, let's talk about that. What you just said, how big is the drug issue in Denver? How big of a driver of crime, and how big is that in there?
I mean, well, per capita for the size of our city is big enough. When we have people dying of fentanyl in Commerce City, mind you, this is Commerce City, this is Adams County, but this is still a part of Denver. Some of those victims probably lived in Denver. When they're finding five and six young adults dead from fentanyl, and they have a baby sitting in the corner, and these young people thought they were just going to party and snort a little cocaine. We have that is another pandemic. We have a few pandemics going on in this city. Youth violence, fentanyl, drug-related violence. It's pretty bad. Yeah.
Legislature's debating the fentanyl thing right now, and you've heard that Mayor Hancock has come out and said, hey, we got to start taking crime seriously. The legislature needs to be tougher on this fentanyl stuff. Where are you on that?
So when it comes to, you know, drugs like cocaine, marijuana, even heroin. Heroin's a pretty hard drug to say, you know, people get killed at that. They really get addicted. They need to really wean themselves off. But when it comes to fentanyl, I mean, don't get me into some conspiracy thing, but wow, where is all of this fentanyl coming from? Poor
China.
Mexicans are not making this much fentanyl. And I have a family member. My daughter's uncle passed away as a young man a couple of years ago from a drug overdose, okay? This has actually hit close to home. And a lot of these young men and women are using cocaine. Cocaine is America's party drug. And, you know, you might think you're just going to snort some cocaine and have fun till 2 a.m., then you have a heart attack and you're dead. If people like Phil Weiser and people like that, because I respect Mr. Weiser and other minds like that, think that there needs to be more penalties around fentanyl use versus locking people up for marijuana or cocaine, then I'm going to let the experts do their job about that.
Well, I'm not sure Phil's an expert on anything to do with criminal law, but he is late to the party on calling for stiffer penalties. That showed up last Friday as opposed to the folks that have been talking about it for weeks. But listen, I could go on and on with you, Terrence. You're a fascinating interview. I'd love to have you back on. If folks want to know more about you or get in touch with you about your campaign or help you out, how do they do that? Do you have a website yet?
So my website is going live today, actually.
Awesome.
So it's Terrence Roberts for Denver Mayor. Look it up. You know, so
would you spell Terrence for us? Two R's in there?
Yes, sir. TerranceRoberts.com. So my blue account will be up today. I know this is conservative talk radio, but yeah. I'm here for conservatives too. We have over 7,000 registered Republican voters in Denver, and I will be their mayor too. And I think that conservative people and people like myself, nobody wants to see our unhoused neighbors sleeping on the streets. Nobody wants to see our kids running around with ghost guns murdering.
Terrence, you add a needed voice and an interesting dynamic to a race that is only going to develop further after this. Hopefully you'll be willing to come back on and continue to have this conversation.
I'll come on anytime you want, and we can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Hey, thank
Even
you.
If I'm wrong,
go ahead.
We can have the discussion.
Thank you so much. Hey, that's Terrence Roberts, civil rights activist, former gang member, current candidate for mayor. Website is going to go live later today. That won't be the last time you hear of him on this show right here. That was a very interesting. I appreciate the background that he has. It is unique. There will be nobody else running for office that has the background that Terrence Roberts has, whether it's for Denver mayor or anything else in the state of Colorado, is my best guess. Listen, when we come back, we'll be wrapping up in that last segment. I'll talk with you about a couple other things going on to kind of set the stage for tomorrow and the rest of the week. And then at 10, Charlie Kirk, 3, Stephen Tubbs. Until then, George Brockler on The George Brockler Show, 710 KNUS. Well, it's not Mr. Jones, it's Mr. Brockler. George Brockler to you here on 710 KNUS. I want to tell you about one of our big first show sponsors for this, and I really appreciate this and respect these guys, and that's our friends at Littleton Jewelry. Love Jesse and his team of homegrown folks, all went to high school in the area. It's a great business, and it's a small business, and I like that as someone who is a conservative, who believes in local roots and all those things. I love the big box store stuff too. I've done shopping there, but these guys treat you like family when you come in there. They'll remember you. They will remember your product, whatever the jewelry is. They take it seriously, and they treat these things as something more than just objects that have financial value. They know they have sentimental value as well. Now, Jesse took this business over from mom and dad when it was, and I say just a watch repair place. They still do that at the highest levels. But they've added to it a whole bunch of other things, including jewelry appraisal, repair, custom jewelry design. They buy and sell silver, gold, other precious metals and stones. The business is going so well that Jesse is expanding into the space. And if there's going to be a grand opening, I really hope they ask me to come there. I tried to swing by there the other night. I just missed when they closed at 6 p.m. by like 3 minutes. And I'm bummed. I got to get back out there and say hi to the folks and run my watch in, which I am carrying around with me on a daily basis to get that thing fixed. But these folks are fantastic. The gorgeous custom designs that they do for jewelry, you got to take a look. And hopefully the custom designer is there. It's the only guy I haven't met yet. You talk with him about it, and they'll set you up with something great and unique and meaningful to you and the person that you give it to. Hell, maybe it's even for just you. And frankly, with Mother's Day coming up and high school graduation coming up or college graduation, this may be the perfect time to think about that unique, can't get it on Amazon kind of gift. Littleton Jewelry is conveniently located on Santa Fe, just south of Hudson Gardens. Look for the jewelry repair sign there. Visit littletonfinejewelry.com. That's littletonfinejewelry.com. Now, listen, in the moments that we have left, a couple things that I want to talk to you about. One, I've got this podcast that I talked to you about maybe 2 weeks ago that we launched called First Name Basis, and it's really an attempt to try to take some of the tribalism and the partisanship out of conversations with people who are policymakers, even policymakers with whom we may viscerally disagree on some of their positions. The very first one we launched was Ed Perlmutter. Go out there. It's available to you. At the time, I did not realize how long of a process it is once you start a podcast to get it up and going, but it's now on Spotify. It's on Apple. It's on fill in the blank. I don't even know all of the other podcasting platforms out there, but it's out there. Do me a favor. Go out there, listen to it, and I want your feedback. Okay, you can email me if you go to 710knus.com. I think you can email me from the app as well. But give me your feedback on it. Tell me what you heard. Did you like it? Did you not like it? What did you want me to get into? I am really trying to stay away from the partisanship angle of this and just get to know these folks on a basis where you might run into them, at a social gathering, in a park, at a bar. I like that one better, at the bar. In fact, maybe in the later versions of this podcast, we do it over a beer to the extent that these folks drink. Now, the next podcast we're going to launch this week is with Leslie Herod. As you know, Leslie Herod, a state representative from Denver, may also, by the way, be interested in running for mayor. Don't know. But Leslie has been a true champion, if you will, on the social justice issues. She plays a really big role in some of the criminal justice stuff. Senate Bill 217, the fentanyl stuff, but I don't talk to her about any of it. We talk to Leslie about Leslie, and I want you, when this thing launches, to take a listen to that as well. Subscribe to the podcast. That matters. The more subscriptions, the better in terms of getting this thing pushed around. And then share what you hear with folks. Share the podcast with other people. It's a conversation I think that we need to continue to have. It isn't going to change your mind on the things you disagree with them about, but it may change how you disagree with them. And I think for a guy that has played a role in politics here in Colorado over the past decade or so, the part that is the most disheartening to me is we have gone from vehemently disagreeing with someone on a policy position to wanting to personally attack them and to want to deride them and to treat them like it's a them or us proposition, when we all come from pretty similar backgrounds, pretty common commitment to wanting to improve the community. It's just the path we take to get there. I saw some of that even within the party that I've claimed as my own since I was 18 this past weekend. And if you listen to the show at 6, 7, and 8, and if you didn't, go back and listen to the podcast. Some really good stuff that went on there. Conversations we had with GOP assembly goers. I thought that was fantastic. In fact, you know what? With the time we have left, I might have talked through this whole thing. Gary has been on hold for a long time. He went to the assembly. Gary, you're on 710 KNUS. You went. What are your reactions?
No, I didn't go. I did want to talk.
Gary! Sorry. Go ahead. I had teed you up as this guy who had gone, and now I feel like I just misled the audience. I just pulled a Hanks Peters assembly. I'm so sorry to perpetrate that fraud on listeners. Go ahead, Gary.
That's right. And I know you're running out of time, so I'll make this quick. I believe Deborah Flora did not make the ballot, correct?
Barely. She barely missed it.
And the fellow you interviewed on Friday, I think he had a...
Peter Yu.
An armed forces background?
No, Peter Yu was not the armed forces guy. I have talked with Eric Odlin before, who was up for 7th CD, and he won that pretty decisively in the... I think he took a whole bunch of the vote, but not enough to keep off Laurel Eimer, but that guy. But Peter Yu, I don't think, is a military dude.
Yeah, I think the individuals, Ron Hanks and some of the others, Tina Peters, who are the big steel advocates.
Yep.
They won, and unfortunately for Colorado, that may stimulate Colorado Republican base who support Trump to vote for Republicans nationally, i.e. Trump or, national. But because those two candidates, Tina Peters and Ron Hanks, was voted, I'm afraid that in Colorado, Michael Bennett will get reelected, Jared Polis will get elected, and the clerk and recorder will be a Democrat. And
Secretary of State is what you're talking about.
Secretary of State, yeah. And that's unfortunate. They didn't hear the message. You know, as we talked about on Friday, this wishy-washy dodged the question by Deborah Flora, hurt her, and this nuance.
The dirty politics that took place on the floor, and Gary, forgive me, I'm running out of time here. Thank you for the call. The dirty politics with the tech stuff about Deborah and the unemployment thing and Eli and the this thing and the Hanks. I hate all that stuff. I just don't think it's fair. I don't think it doesn't take guts to be that anonymous texter or emailer. I think it sucks. But let me give you the ray of hope there. The Elbert County contingent, and these are true. Elbert County, in many ways, best county in the state of Colorado, true patriots that show up all the time to fight for Republican causes. They got up and walked out when Hanks took to the podium because of what he did to John Kellner with his supporters going up there and doing that thing we talked about in the 8 o'clock hour. Listen, I'll be back tomorrow. I want to thank Dick Wadhams, KBB, Priscilla Ron, Terrence Roberts, and you for making this show go by so quickly and so awesomely. Stefan at 3, tomorrow at 6 for me, George Brockler, 710 KNUS.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.